Welcome to the School of Kingdom Writers podcast. My name is Brad Paquette, and today I'm sitting down with author Christopher Sumlin. So we'll get to him in just a few minutes, but super excited to talk to this guy. And the big reason that I want to talk to these authors is there's so much attention given in the world of writing to authors that have made it big, right? And authors that have done grand things. And then you hear a lot of bad advice on the other end of things. You hear from people who haven't really made it and becomes this blind leading the blind experience. So right now, the School of Kingdom Writers is training more than 200 writers to craft content that is inspired by the Holy Spirit and to use that in a way to leverage that for the kingdom in the United States and around the world. So right now, we're training writers from more than 17 countries to do exactly that, including writing novels and creating social media content. We have a full-time class starting this fall, which we're super excited about. And so I encourage you to check this stuff out, especially if you're an author. You can go to sokw.org. To learn more about what we're doing or subscribe to our newsletter, which is a great way to stay in the loop. We also send out regular emails with encouragement, tips, and prayer requests, and just a number of ways that you can stay in the loop with our organization. So with no further ado, let's talk to Mr. Sumlin. So Chris, welcome to the School of Kingdom Writers podcast. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. When you reached out and said you were doing this, I was so excited. I told everyone I'm going live on Facebook with Brad. We're going to have a great conversation, and I'm just hoping I can provide some value, say something good, and hopefully inspire someone that's listening today.
That's awesome, man. And my apologies for that. I just want to make sure we're watching the comments on Facebook. So if you're on Facebook, please feel free to jump in. We'd love to hear from you. Nobody will support you like another author. So whenever you have a chance to network with other people, make sure that you're jumping in. But Chris, I love, there were so many reasons I wanted to talk to you, and you are the first author that we're talking to in this capacity, but I love the energy that you bring to every single thing that you do. You're just positive and optimistic, and you're ready to get stuff done, and you believe in yourself. Which is incredible. You know, I mean, so many authors that I talk to, they're so afraid of what might happen if they put themselves out there. But you seem to approach the world with this why not attitude, right? Like, why shouldn't you be an intern for Jimmy Fallon, right? Why shouldn't you intern with some of the biggest names in Los Angeles? Why shouldn't you do these things? Why shouldn't you publish a book? So where does that come from? How do you do that?
Well, I think part of it is innate. I'm someone who definitely plans to be very ambitious. I love what I do, and I love creating a life that I can be proud of. It also is really rooted in my religion and being a Christian. I grew up reading the Bible stories, knowing that if I had the faith of a mustard seed, that I could do anything. One of my favorite Bible verses is Mark 9:23 that says, anything is possible to him that believes. So I really, really believe that. One of my biggest frustrations that I have with people is they'll go to church, they'll know the Bible, they'll sing all the songs, but they don't have any power in their life. So for me, when I go to church and I hear all these things about how I can do anything that I said I can do, and I can strive and dream and do whatever it is that I desire, I really take that seriously. And I'm just a man of faith. It's not easy, but I just believe in God. And I believe that God wants me to be these things and do the work that I'm doing. And that's where my confidence really lies in, is my faith and belief in God.
Man, and I can see that in every part of you. And I really like how in your books, they're not Christian books by any means, but they do normalize prayer, right? You just talk about prayer because that's just a thing that you do, right? And you are bringing such an important perspective to people that you care about and that you love. And I feel like that almost happened organically, right? Like you've kind of developed this method of talking to your peers in a way that nobody else is doing. Like, was that organic, or did you sit down before that first book? Because you're a twice published author, soon to be thrice published. And I've got a couple of your books here dealing with this thing called life and dealing with this thing called college, which is awesome. So what is the voice that you see lacking in the world that you feel like God has given you through these first two books? And then we'll talk also about, you know, what you see for your future. But with these first two books, you know, what was the voice that you saw missing from the world that you felt that you could bring to life?
Sure. It was never my intention or plan to be an author. It was not something that as a little kid, I was around saying, I want to write a book one day. I was at home with my mother watching television. And I know when I'm hearing the voice of God, or what people will call their gut or their instinct, it wasn't even in my mental process. And something just said, write a book called Deal With This Thing Called Life. It's going to be 12 chapters, 12 lessons, and 12 stories. And when I had that epiphanous moment where I had that direction, which I believe was the voice of God, I was unsure of it. I was like, well, what do I have to say? What am I going to do? What am I going to put out into the world? Because I know a book never goes away. And so when I started writing, I felt like there was value in my experiences. There was value in someone growing up in Columbus, Ohio, living in immense poverty, going to Morehouse College, living in Los Angeles, where some people may look at those experiences and minimize them and say, oh, that's not a big deal. But where I come from and the people that I've met, they aren't doing things like this. So it's important that I'm very present and show people what I'm doing in a way that's authentic and relatable and let them know that they can do the same. And I often feel that when people reach a certain level of success, they are quiet about their accomplishments. They don't want to show you what happens behind the scenes. They don't want to show you the hard work of when things are not pretty. So for me, my intention with my book is to tell extremely authentic and candid, inspiring stories that have a happy ending that when people read, they can relate to it, they can feel it, and hopefully be inspired by. And I haven't really seen much of that work being done. So it was my intention to create that work, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, and I think it really works, you know. But it takes that attitude that, like, the anything is possible attitude that you have to do that, right? Because, you know, I remember when I was first talking to you about this book, I'm thinking, okay, this kid, you were a kid then. You're not a kid anymore.
I mean, I was literally 21 years old.
Is that how old you were? Okay.
I was 21 when I started that book.
So you weren't quite a kid. You were an adult then too,
but
you,
a baby, that's young.
This young guy, right? And he wants to compete against authors like, you know, John Eldridge, right? Like these established names, but you brought a different angle, right? You know, you're not an old man talking to young people. You're a young person talking to other young people. And I think that works. How do you deal with, I think it's a common fear of young authors. And you touched on a little bit that you're going to put something out that you're going to regret later on, right? How do you deal with that anxiety?
Yeah, it's not something that I think about too often because I am not a person who has many regrets, and all of my stories end positively. And I'm not ever nervous to tell or share a story at all. I'm just someone who's focused on the present day. I'm not someone who's really obsessed with my future or even my past in a way. It just kind of is what it is. I was watching an interview with Lady Gaga and Oprah for Weight Watchers. And one thing Lady Gaga talks about is radical acceptance. Like when we have issues, quirks about ourselves or situations that occur, radically accepting them no matter what. And that's one thing that I try to practice is like wherever I am, accepting whatever that moment is and trying to learn whatever the lesson is I'm supposed to learn and then sharing that with others. And I have no interest in rewriting any of my books or doing any type of second edition. I just know that that's where I was then. And I think there's value in that. And that's what I rested is knowing that that was an authentic expression of where I was then. And hopefully I'll grow and do something bigger and better later. And it's also important that we entertain a conversation that you can grow. You can change your mind. You can say, hey, when I was a toddler, I used to walk around in a diaper and pee, and now I can go to the bathroom on my own. I mean, we do it all the time, but intellectually and with our ideas, sometimes we can get stuck and get stagnant and not be able to say, hey, I used to really feel this way, but today I feel differently and I've grown and shown behavior that is reflective of growth. And that's what I try to do. So yeah, I just try to be as present as I can, as positive as I can, and also allow myself to grow and to change.
And I think that's humility too, right? The acceptance that we've changed and that we are going to continue to change, mm-hmm. right? But if we extend that logic that says, you know, don't publish because I might change, then we never publish anything, right? Because you're never fully grown, right? I intend to keep learning and keep growing until I die. I do remember, you know, you touched on your background a little bit when we did your first book. So Chris hired me as a consultant for his publishing process, essentially. And so he hired me to help him improve the writing and, you know, figure out the market and the audience, things like that. I encouraged you to explore the your background a little bit, you know, because mm-hmm. you mentioned, and actually, so I want to share how we met, actually, if that's all right.
Yes, Chris. Please, because I think people need to know how this all came to be. This is very important.
Yeah, so I've known Chris for quite a while now. When Melissa and I moved to Columbus, Ohio, we wanted to buy a house in the inner city. We wanted to live among people who were different from ourselves. And so we bought this house for 10 grand that didn't have any plumbing, didn't have any electricity, and we fixed up one room. We insulated the dining room and boarded up those windows and we moved in. And Chris and his family lived next door to us. And it was so awesome to have you guys next door because you were like safe people. You know, I mean, that was a hard place for me to live. I'm coming from the outside. Right. And I think it was a hard place for everybody that lived there. I mean, it was, our street was probably 40% vacant. Most of the time. Mm-hmm. You remember those neighbors? I mean, right on the corner across from me, there was like the mom had one house and across the corner, it was the grandma, and they would just yell at each other across the street all day. Oh, and it was like, just go over there, right? Just go over there and have a conversation. But they yell back and forth all the time. And I didn't know Chris well then, but kind of in passing, I knew your family and things like that. Why did you make the choice not to go harder into that rough upbringing that you had?
Yes. And I remember that because I remember when I got my developmental edit for the first book, you were like, to me, it seems like you're just like living in the Beverly Hills and like this privileged kid, like you have to really go there. And partly is because of just being respectful to other people. Like I'm someone who's very open and candid and love to share. I don't have an ego in that way. I love sharing my story. It gives me joy. But necessarily my parents or my siblings or my grandparents or my school necessarily would love for me to go into the intricacies of the hardships that we experience. So part of me wants to be respectful to my peers and be respectful to my family. And then another part of me is just want to have some sense of pride within myself. I don't want to go sometimes too self-deprecating where someone could look at me and pull that card if we were to get into an argument. So it's hard trying to have that balance of being respectful to myself and not oversharing, but also telling an authentic and candid experience that people can learn from. But it's a balance, and it's something that I toy with every day, especially on social media, because there are times we can overshare in a way that's disrespectful and disregards ourselves. So I try to stay away from that.
Yeah. And that's something that I've really struggled with, you know, even just in this interview, thinking about how do I say what I just said while still being respectful to everybody involved. You know, it's like, as a white person, I came into a predominantly African-American neighborhood to like do good, right? And that's almost a presumptuous thing in itself, right? So that's really challenging. And then to talk about that is difficult. So do you think you'll go there more in the future?
I think as I continue to grow and come out of certain situations, I will be more candid and more authentic. I feel like the third book that I'm producing now is the most authentic and candid I've become, where I really try to go there and explain when I was in Los Angeles and was living in a hostel and I didn't really have a lot of money and how I had $500 and two luggages and no suits. Like, I feel like the third book is more, and as I grow and come out of more situations, I'll be okay to go back. But some of the things I'm still struggling with, I'm not ready to share yet because I'm not out of those struggles. So I'm hoping that as I continue to grow and evolve, I can talk about some of those experiences that I think will really touch a lot of people. But it's a process. The becoming, like Michelle Obama says, it's a process.
Yeah, for sure. And I got to tell you, though, man, you better go fast, because one of us is going to tell the stories of that neighborhood before the other. And then it's going to be used up at that point, right?
True. That's very true. So, yes, I have to look into that.
All right. Cool. Well, as you've been exploring this journey, there's a ton of advice out there. I know you know that. And I'm sure you've come across a ton of different people telling you got to do this thing or that thing in order to grow your audience or sell books. What have you found that's really working for you now that like feels right, even if you're not doing it as much as you wish you did? But I guess, what do you want to pour yourself more into?
Yeah, I think some really good advice that anyone listening is, good writers are great readers. I think that is one of the bare step one things that maybe not a lot of people do. Whenever someone expresses to me that they want to write a book or have written a book or want to write a script or any type of writing or creating of any sort, my first question is, well, how many books have you read? Because we have to make sure that when we're speaking and we're creating things, that comes from some type of inspired place that's in abundance and there's something to say. So when people say, what's the first book that I should read? It's like, you have to be reading in order to create. Great writers are great readers. That's really good advice. And not a lot of people do that work. They sometimes think they can skip that. Like, oh, I'm just going to write a script having not read any type of pilots that are successful. I'm going to write a book not having read 10 books. Like, I'm someone who's read, I read 3 books over the weekend. Like, I'm someone who's reading like that. So it shouldn't be of a surprise when I'm writing a book, because if I'm creating content that people are going to spend their hard earned dollar on, let's make sure that it's good. So I make sure that I do that work. So my advice to anyone that does any type of writing is making sure that you're ingesting information and taking things in. So when you start to produce and pour things out, there's something of value there. And that's really good advice that I've tried to practice my best as well.
Yeah. I think that's Jesus' advice too, right? I'm pretty sure he said something like, out of the overflow of the heart, the mouth speaks, right? Like what you put in is instrumental in what comes out. And Chris, I think one of the things that you did exceptionally well with dealing with this thing called college, and I think this has probably been your more successful book of the two, right? Mm-hmm. Is that you so specifically targeted an audience, right? I mean, you're looking at first generation college students, and you're talking to them as a peer who's slightly ahead, you know, as if they could sit down with a college senior and say, What should I know before I get started? So tell me about the genesis of this book. How did you get there? How did you get to that audience? Was it organic or did you sit down with the audience first?
Yeah, I felt like with the first book, it was a very spiritual kind of Holy Spirit write a book thing. And then I understood where I started reading more. I was reading some books by Ryan Holiday. Anyone that creates any type of content, I suggest The Perennial Seller, which you told me to read. I read The Perennial Seller, which was a really good book by Ryan Holiday. And so I really think that was important that when I understood, okay, there's a book, who is this book for and what does this book do? Because I couldn't really answer that with my first book. I just knew that I was coming from an instinctual, authentic place. And I hoped that someone was going to support it. And luckily I had some moderate sales, which were fun. And I had book events. But with the second one, when I graduated that day after graduating from Morehouse College, I was in my dorm room in Whitehall. And I said, I want to do this again, but I want to talk about my experience from Morehouse going down as a high school senior, not really having a lot of support, going to Atlanta and having that arc from starting that journey and finishing it. So the day after I graduated from Morehouse, I was in my dorm writing and I knew that I wanted to create a book for first generation college students that were unsure about going to college. So I always joke with my friends and I said, y'all don't need to read the second book because y'all were there with me. Like you were at Morehouse with me. So for that one, I'm like, if you guys don't buy this, read this, that's fine. But it was particularly for high school seniors, high school juniors, kids that were looking to be inspired by a gentleman that was starting off from not necessarily the best situation and then becoming a Morehouse graduate, because I knew that there was value in that. And even in the introduction, I prefaced the book by saying like, hey, I wasn't the valedictorian. Hey, I had a lot of struggles. Hey, I just barely made it across that stage. But here are some real stories that I feel like you can learn from my journey as how if you take these into account, maybe you will be the valedictorian. Maybe you will go further and farther than I did. But it's more of that reaching as we climb type thing. And that's what my intention was with dealing with this thing called college.
Yeah. And because of that, you've been invited to speak tell me some of the things that have come out of this book, some of the opportunities.
Yeah. Like that book was kind of the one that got me really going. I spoke for United Negro College Fund because United Negro College Fund specializes in first generation students. So when the development director at the time, Natalie Coles, was aware of the book, like she was giving that book with her on all of her trips. She was giving it out to students that she was encountering every time they had banquets or fundraising events. I was taking the book with me. So I was meeting people all over the state who were first generation college students who were at HBCUs looking for guidance and support. Because of my work with UNCF, I was also able to get some corporate speaking gigs when I spoke at the Huntington National Bank in Columbus and spoke at Columbia Gas at their fundraising events. And that was really great. And then I also spoke with I spoke for the TRIO program, which is this program that helps specialize in first generation college students. Someone literally Googled college readiness books and my book just happened to come up. So I always say like, when you put yourself out there and believe in yourself, people need what you have to offer. So we can never diminish and deny our aspirations because someone needs the book that we're going to write, the song that we're going to sing, the recipes that we're going to cook. So I was able to speak to that Raleigh, North Carolina TRIO group because someone was Googling college readiness programs and then they saw my book and I was able to impact hundreds of kids by going down there and them giving my book away to their students. So that book was a very lucrative opportunity, one that really helped me a lot. And I was really proud of it. Still am proud of it.
Absolutely. And it's been amazing to watch you do those things and to take off with this. So what's coming with the third book? You want to talk about that?
Yeah. So I just, I turned 26 last year. And so when I was when I was 25 at the time, just going into the new year of 2020, I felt I want to write a book again because I do love to share. Like it's not somewhere someone tells me it's time for you to write a book or can you do? I love to share my story. I think I love when people tell me when I read your book, it inspired me. And so I was sitting at home and I was like, hey, I think I'm going to do this again about a book that talks about me from like 19 to 25 and what that arc is because the 20s can be a very difficult time. It's a time of exploration. It's a time of development. It's a time of transformation. So I said, well, I've made it this far and I've graduated with 3 degrees. I've stayed out of trouble. I've never been to jail. Why don't I take some of my best stories and my best lessons and my best experiences and thread them together and create a book? And that's what I'm working on now, halfway through my 20s. And I'm hoping that it really inspires a lot of people. It's my most candid and authentic book. And I think that when people read it, they're really going to be touched and inspired by the candor of the stories and the insightful life lessons.
Yeah, that's awesome. And so what's your website, Chris? We're not wrapping up yet, but I don't want to forget. How can people find out more about you in this book?
Sure. So I'm all over social media at Chris Sumlin. And then I also have my website, www.thechrissumlin.com. And at the top of my website, there's a green banner where you can help buy, help support the book by pre-ordering a copy of the third one. So there's a pre-order link available. My two books are available on Amazon by typing my name, Chris Sumlin. And I'm always producing content. I also have a YouTube channel and just plan to continue to create content. So I definitely encourage people to Google me, find me, and reach out, because I love meeting new people and sharing my story with anyone that will listen.
Yeah. And talk to me about the pre-orders. How's that going?
It's going really well. It's really interesting because we're in the midst of a pandemic. So I felt kind of odd asking for support in the midst of the pandemic, but it's been great for people that are supporting and just saying, hey, like, I know you're trying to reach this many books. Like, how can I just support? How can I help? How can I sow a seed into making sure that you get your publishing deal paid for? How can I support you in any way that I can? Can I share your post? And I remember when I posted the cover on Instagram, which I was very nervous about because I didn't know if anybody had anything to, any care in what I had to say. So many people shared it on Instagram and so many people reached out and said, congratulations. I got so many pre-orders and so many people like, well, I don't get paid yet, but next Friday I'm in, like, I'm going to support. So I'm really grateful about how this third book is going. And I can't wait to actually hold it in my hand and sign the books and send it out. It's going to be really great.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm excited for you too. And so what's the worst advice you followed in your journey as an author?
Well, I tried to not follow advice at all. I really tried to focus and work hard and read. But I remember when I was doing the first book and I understood that there was a high monetary cost to creating the book. And someone said to me like, oh, well, just self-publish and like just do a cheaper route. And I think sometimes we can sacrifice creating quality for quickness. And that is something that we want to stay away from. So although it was expensive to produce the books are hundreds and thousands of dollars to create these books. It's not a cheap venture to create something of quality, to pay for the editor, to pay for distribution. It's a lot of costs that go into it, but I'm proud of it. It's great when someone can go on Amazon, buy my book, do this thing called college. And then 2 days later, it comes in the mail on Amazon in an envelope. And so, and the reason they're able to do that is because we've invested in distribution, we've invested in editors, we've invested into the cover design and the photograph. So some of the worst advice I ever got was to kind of bypass that process and be quick and sacrifice quality. So my advice to anyone listening to this is to understand that sometimes when you're producing any type of work, it may not be as instantaneous and quick as you may like, but what you're doing will take time. On my podcast, I have this podcast where I talk about microwave success versus crockpot success. For when you want to make like a Salisbury steak with mashed potatoes and peas, you can easily go to Save a Lot Kroger and get a frozen dinner, pop it in the microwave and get it. Or you can make that crockpot and let that meat sit in there with that seasoning, let it roast and let it cook for hours and have a tender, really good meat. Do you want this TV dinner or do you want the crockpot? Do you want the microwave? You know, we have to ask ourselves these questions. So that was some really bad advice, was looking past that. Because we have to understand when we're creating something of quality, something that is good, something that we can be proud of, sometimes it's going to take time.
Yeah, absolutely. And so they were encouraging you to do like a free do-it-yourself kind of self-publishing route. Like, absolutely, right?
Which is possible, which people do, as I'm sure you're aware of.
But I'm very aware. Yeah.
And I wanted to work with you and your team. And I understood that even though it was X amount of dollars, that it was worth it. And I'm proud of what I've done because of following my heart instead of the quickness or the fast or the microwave success.
Sure, absolutely. And just for our audience, for consistency, as far as you guys have been following the School of Kingdom Writers. So Chris used Boyle & Dalton, which is a self-publishing hybrid company. So a self-publishing company is, you know, somebody that you can pay to help with the editing and the distribution, all these things that Chris is talking about. And Boyle & Dalton is a company that I started in, some time ago, that brings in some elements of like a small press experience. So we vet manuscripts for quality before we publish them and things of that nature. And so that's the route that Chris took to publish. And looking back on it, how do you feel about that route? I mean, you've kind of addressed that a little bit, but if you did it all again, would you do anything differently?
I wouldn't, because the team as a whole was pushing me to become my best. And when I get the manuscript back, which is always the worst part of the process, after I send that first draft and then you send me back with all the edits, it's so hard. It knocks me down every time. But because we have that really hard, respectful relationship where you're saying like, this is not good. I remember the first book that I wrote the whole first book in a month. And I remember you saying, like, the writing is just sloppy. It's just not there. And me getting that feedback that was rooted in love, firstly, because sometimes whenever you're trying to create something, you will have critics, you will have naysayers, you will have haters, sure. But that's not what this was. This was someone saying, I'm rooting for you, I'm on your team, and here's how we can get you to the next level. Because whenever you take in criticism, you want to make sure that it's coming from a place of love and that is rooted in authenticity and positivity, in which yours was. And so because of that, I was able to say, okay, we're going to make sure I'm going to write better. I'm going to do my manuscript. I'm going to do my edits. I'm going to read more. I'm going to get it right. And we've created quality products that people are buying in bulk. We've had companies say, hey, we want 100 copies of Chris Sumlin's book. And that wouldn't have been the case if I had typos, if I would have did the self-publishing route, because I do write so fast and it can be sloppy. It wouldn't have been the experience that I had. So again, quality takes time, and sometimes quality takes cost, because you get what you pay for.
Yeah, absolutely. And so my primary role with Chris was as his developmental editor. So like he's saying, he would send me the first draft, not the first draft, but a draft of his manuscript when he felt like it was ready. And then I would tear it to pieces and tell him all of the things that I thought that he could do better. So how do you manage that? You know, I'm always on this end of it, right? And I pride myself on telling people things that your mom won't tell you, right? Everybody in your life is going to tell you, oh, it's great, I love it, I'm so proud of you for writing a whole book. But I'm going to come along and tell you all of the ways that your stuff still stinks so that you can make it better. But I can say 100 times in the report or in the consultation, you know, I'm on your side and I want good things for you. Is that hard nonetheless?
Yeah. Every time I get it back, especially in the first two manuscripts, because remember, you were doing them manually with ink pen, like you were writing them. Yeah. So getting like the red ink was hard. And when you are being, it's a time for growth. And yeah, I hate that red pen.
It's still here, man. I just use it all the time for everything now.
Yeah, it's tough. Every time I get the feedback, it's hard, but growth is hard. And anytime you're in a space that's comfortable, and when you're resting on your laurels or your talent or people that are gassing up who believe in you, that's an uncomfortable place to be. Even in our physical bodies, when you're exercising and you're lifting weights, you're literally tearing down the fibers in your body to bring forth muscle. And so that's the same thing that we do with our brains, with our projects. Like when you're pushing for growth, it's painful. There may be growing pains, but it's worth it in the end. So every time I get that manuscript, I call my friends and I'm hurt. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't think Brad likes me anymore. And I drink my glass of wine and I'm hurt. But I give myself that moment to have that fit, get it all out. And then I get back to work. Then I'm like, okay, we have to push this out. Okay, let me see what he said here. And then every single time I've done that, and then I read what happens after the manuscript, it's 10 times stronger and something that I'm proud of. So whenever you're facing opposition that is an invitation for you to grow, it's always important that you get out of your feelings and get into your purpose, get into the vision of why you're creating this project in the first place, get into the excitement of what it's going to be like when it actually comes out, and lay in that. And when you do that, and you can push through that growing pain and eventually produce something that you can be proud of. And that's my experience. And I know that can be the experience for anyone that's listening as well.
Yeah, for sure. I appreciate that. And outside of writing, what's painful in your life right now? Where is God stretching and growing you?
Definitely with the pandemic, finances are very hard because I have a new house, which doesn't this look great behind me?
It does. Yeah.
Classic. Thank you. I appreciate it. This time a year ago, I was practically homeless living in LA shooting, for the stars, trying to reach my dream. And so for me to come back over here to Columbus, when, I came back from LA, my income went down and my expenses went up because the house is not, you know, it's not cheap. It's a house I'm trying to manage. This isn't an apartment. So it's hard trying to continue to do the work that I'm doing and create content that is of quality and get the ring light and the microphone and making sure that I'm on social media and I'm paying for my website and the YouTube and all these things that I'm doing and making sure that I'm managing the house. So I feel like with this new level, there's new cost, literally, spiritually, physically, financially, all of the above. And so trying to meet that and get to that place is very challenging, especially with the third book, trying to make sure that it has everything that it needs. While managing a new house, very, very, very hard. But I can do it.
Yeah, and so I mean, that's the struggle of every author in your position, right? Is you're not making enough money yet where you can just write books all the time. That would be awesome, but mm-hmm. You're not quite there yet. And so,
most people aren't. We also have to let people know that authors is not some lucrative Hollywood la-di-da career path. We do it because we love it, because it comes from a purpose-driven place, not because I'm going to write my third book and I'm headed to the mall. Yeah, 100%.
So what's your strategy? I mean, how do you balance that? Or specifically, I mean, not just advice wise, but what are you going to do to make all those pieces fit in the coming months? How have you adapted to the pandemic and all these things?
Sure. Firstly, it's important that I'm honest about my situation and ask for what I need from those that love me. Because so often when we're hungry or going through something or have a need, we want to wear our ego, we want to wear our pride, and we want to not share. But sometimes I have to call my grandmother and say, hey, I need help. I'm a little behind here. Hey, can you support me? So it's coming to the realization of my situation and asking for what I need first. Secondly, doing things that may be untraditional or more humbling, doing whatever it takes. So if I have to go work at Family Dollar, or I have to go wash someone's car, or I have to go clean someone's home, or I have to edit someone's resume or write a paper, in order to do what I need to do, doing those things and not being afraid of that. This pandemic has really put people in a lot of compromising situations. And this isn't the first time that I've been here, because anytime you're reaching for a dream or reaching for the stars, there's always going to be growing pains, and every new level is a new devil. So when I was in grad school, I remember working at Raising Cane's after I was already published and was a Morehouse grad. With my Morehouse degree and my first book, I was asking people, do you want fries with that? How many chicken tenders do you want? And doing that humbly, you know? So it's okay to sometimes do things that aren't necessarily traditional or the right thing to do. But when you have cost, you have dream, you have purpose, it's part of the process. So yeah.
Yeah. All right. So where are you going from here? What are your aspirations beyond the third book? You know, whenever you go live on social media, you do different things, you always get response, right? So what do you feel like God is calling you to use this voice and this presence that is kind of organically developing around you? How are you going to put that to good use?
Yeah, I plan to do more content on my website and creating things that are more coming from me. I worked in a corporate space. I worked at a talent agency last year and really dreaded it and didn't enjoy it as much. And so I'm really doing my best to try to become my own boss and collaborate with other creators to create things that people can consume and be inspired by. It's always my intention and my hope to get people to think higher and feel deeper. So I'm always trying to push for new ideas and push people to think and challenge themselves and bring people to a new level of thinking. I'm also trying to get people to believe in themselves. There's a lot of stuff out here that is encouraging people to not reach their potential, to not create things, to not believe in themselves.
So what's an example of that, Chris?
Yes. So comfortability altogether. When someone says, hey, I work at this amazing company, I'm working a corporate job at, Oracle, and I don't want to be here anymore. I'm making $60,000 a year. I'm making more than my parents, but I'm still unfulfilled. That is a space that a lot of people can be in that is uncomfortable, that can bring anxiety, that can bring depression and unfulfillment. And so it's for me to say, yes, you can live on faith. Yes, you can step out of your box and try to do something different. And when you do that, the universe, God will have your back. And I'm an example of that. And so I really want to try to break people out of that thinking, a lot of that self-deprecating, imprisoned mindset. And I hope to create content that always will do that type of work. That's something I'm super duper passionate about.
Yeah, absolutely. And what do you think the biggest issue facing the church is right now?
The biggest issue facing the church is exclusion and not keeping up with the times. I feel like with a lot of churches, there's a lot of traditional rituals that aren't necessarily the most beneficial spiritually that churches still uphold that aren't inclusive to new people's way of living. No one wants to go to a church where they can be beat down and bullied for being who they are. We need to make sure that love and acceptance is the first message, and then everything else that follows after that. And I thank God that I'm a part of a church community. I go to Reform Nash online every Sunday, and the message is inclusion. Like we're a family, we're a community. We're going to reform the church. And I think that we have to make sure that as we move forward, because culture is moving fast. And I don't think that the church is moving as fast as culture is. And young people are a part of culture. So unless we just want all of our members to dry out and die, we're going to need to find an intersection of culture and church. And I think that's the biggest issue facing the churches today, is they're not doing that.
Do you think that's mostly, from your perspective, a matter of format, or is it theology?
I think it's a mixture of both. I'm not that well-versed in theology to give that argument, so I don't really want to say anything ignorantly, but I will just say, in my experience, from what I've seen, it's very dichotomous, where people who go to church, I remember I was having a conversation with a woman, and I was like, hey, have you ever read Gucci Mane's autobiography? I don't even want to entertain someone who writes and raps like that. And yeah. I think we're losing conversation, and that's how we grow, is through communication. So I think that because we're so polarized on two different opposite sides of the spectrum, that we're losing the conversation, losing the community. And that's to our detriment. So when we start looking to each other's eyes and meeting people where they're at with acceptance, love, and compassion first, I think that's when we'll see a shift and some changes that I think are very much needed.
Sure, absolutely. And I like that you mentioned that example. You see that so much with Christian media, right? Where it's Christian by Christians for Christians, mm-hmm. and it never crosses the line, right? It never gets itself outside of a Christian bubble in order to influence people who aren't yet willing to take that label or that identity yet. And I think that is a powerful thing that your books have done really well. So closing thoughts, Chris, what should people know about you? How can they connect with you? What do you want my audience to know?
Well, I just want to thank everyone for listening to this podcast and listening and joining us on this Facebook Live. As we said before, I'm Chris Sumlin. I'm on a mission to inspire and touch everyone that I can to live the best life that they believe in, that they can be proud of. We're dying every day. And so it's important that when we die, that we can be proud of the life that we're living every day. All we have is this life. So it's always my intention to lead by example and show people to maximize the life that you've been given. Maximize every opportunity, love on each other while you have them here, and do your best to lead a life that you can be proud of. That's the type of content that I'm creating. If anyone wants to support me or follow me, they can follow me on Instagram at TheChrisSumlin. You can follow me on Twitter at ChrisSumlin, and you can visit my website at www.thechrissumlin.com. And I'm hoping just to continue to do the work that God would have me to do and be the man that he would have me to be. And thank you so much for this opportunity.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much, Chris, for your time today. I know it's been edifying for our audience to listen to you and to really hear what the grind is really like for an author and how you do this day to day. So you've done a tremendous job. So once again, this is the School of Kingdom Writers podcast. You can learn more about the school at sokw.org and subscribe to our stuff there so that you can stay in the loop for more content like this. Next Wednesday, December 16th, if you're following us live on Facebook, I'll be talking to author Shannon Upton, who uses home organization to help people clean out their lives so that they have more space for Jesus. So I'm excited to talk to her. So please join me there. If you have any questions, you can always reach out to us. So before we're done, if you're watching us live on Facebook, please click like and share this with somebody that's going to be built up and encouraged by it. And if you're listening to the podcast, please take 1 minute right now and subscribe to our channel and send this link to one writer in your life. Even if they're not going to love it, there's a good chance that they know somebody that needs to hear what Chris has said today. So thanks for joining us. Be blessed, and we'll see you next week.
Podcast. Subscribe today. Join the movement at sokw.org.